Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestle Horror.
Greetings, viewers and listeners. Meat Hook Jim here with my haunted house behind me. My co-host with Pennywise, Wrestle Horror, and whatever he's got back there. Donnie, what's going on?
Oh, not much. I got a whole slew of stuff behind me. I got some wrestling. I got some horror, some haunt. Got a little bit of everything.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, right? On this episode of Wrestle Horror, our special guest is Philip Hernandez. Philip is with the Haunted Attraction Network, but he also has a few other hats. Philip, why don't you explain to the listeners what those other hats are?
So besides the Haunted Attraction Network, I am the CEO of Gantam Lighting and Controls. My little Gantam shirt on, yeah. So I can make sure I at least represent that. I'm also the editor-in-chief of Seasonal Entertainment Source Magazine, which used to publish quarterly, and now it's publishing twice a year. And I'm on the board of directors for the Slice Creative Network based in Orlando. And I am a co-host of Green Tagged Theme Park and 30 with Scott Swenson. I published 6 books. Two of them are Scott Swenson's books. And recently we just published one last week, The 13 Commandments of Haunting. So
this one right here,
that one right there. Look at you have all the props. So you're like, here's the magazine. Here's the book. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm more prepared than I am. I don't have any of these things.
I'm a student of the game.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah. Wow. With so many hats, how do you find some time for yourself? I mean,
So there's the glib answer, which is that this is what I do. You know, I'm sure as you guys know, I was saying with Jim earlier, like about doing 2 podcasts and Donnie doing his wrestling and this, right. It's like, these are kind of the things that we do, I guess, like work/hobby, you know, this is what it is. But the longer answer is that I have a like ridiculously complicated, like project management system that I use to run my life. So I don't just use it for Gantam, but okay. like I use Asana, and it's one of those like company management software tools. Okay. And basically I have a workflow for even our podcast episodes. So I have a workflow, and it is 36 steps long to take a podcast from brainstorming to complete finished. And so those 36 steps are kind of mapped out on a timeline. And then I have a content calendar. And so on the network, we publish Tuesdays and Thursdays, at least through HauntCon, we'll be publishing Tuesdays and Thursdays until things calm down. And so each of those dates has a little workflow. So that's the longer answer. There is actually a method to my madness. And if I didn't have that to tell me what I'm supposed to do every day, it would be absolute chaos. Or I don't know. For me, it would be chaos.
Well, based on what you do, I can see why it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I wanted to touch on this year's haunt season. I know everybody's made reports on their podcasts and on their websites about reporting on how the seasons were going. But yeah, like I said, I've seen Max on, you know, doing his reports on Haunted Attraction Network. And it seems like you guys would have your finger on the pulse just about as much as anybody on the 2020 haunt season. So in your guys' opinions and what you'd learned and seen, how did this year go for what it was anyway?
So for the haunts that opened, it went really well, but not many haunts opened. And I was just saying this to Brian at Haunt Topic and Haunter's Toolbox and Daryl yesterday, the concept of, I think many fewer haunts than I think we think opened, just because there are a lot of haunts aren't aware of the community that exists. There are a lot of them that are not, you know, that they go to trade shows locally, or they have local haunt clubs, and maybe they don't participate in the internet haunt scene like all of us do. And so because of that, I think there are many, many more that we're not aware of that did not open. But the haunts that did open and that figured out a way to do it had a really good season. That would include haunts. And so to take a slight step back, at the network, we do an industry report every year that I also publish in the magazine, which Donnie, you probably got it last year, that huge, huge one. And so this year we looked at 28 traditional haunted attractions that opened as walkthrough experiences like they normally do. And then we looked at 28 drive-through haunts. And then we looked at a third category of haunt, which was people that pivoted into something that was not a drive-through and also not a walkthrough experience. And we also looked at 30 zoos and 28 theme parks. And we put all those together in kind of a big matrix. And we'll be releasing the full report in January to everybody who is subscribed. It's not a paid thing. You know, it's one of the things we do at the network to help everyone kind of understand where we are. And so of those each three categories, they all did well. Even the people that pivoted into the third direction, so like the haunted car washes that just opened up new this year, they all sold out. And even the events like Inside from Creep LA. You know, Creep LA used to be a very immersive, small, you know, kind of private contact, full contact experience, and they pivoted to they got access to a haunted properties in downtown LA, and they put actors in them, and then the guests would walk around the house and go from house to house, and the actors were all on the inside and they would perform scenes. So it was a linear story progression, but it happened for the actors would move from window to window and look in, and each window had like a window scene that would evolve. And so it was still COVID safe, but it was this whole different way of doing a haunt that they'd never done. And that experience sold out within 30 minutes without any marketing. They just put it their email list and it just sold out. So I think kind of across the board, you saw the haunts that opened do well. And that's the good news, right? The bad news is that a lot of haunts were not able to open. And that really puts them in a difficult position cash-wise, because, you know, depending on the county you're in, it's still a little bit up in the air as to, you know, what's going to be required in 2021. And so not having tried anything in 2020 and then being behind due to that lack of cash flow, it's just a whole different position. So mixed bag.
Right. Now, have you heard of any, being that we're coming up into the Christmas week here, have you heard of any haunts doing a lot of successful Christmas haunt?
Mm-hmm. Actually, there are quite a few that have done successful Christmas events. That is actually another section to our report. So I have a full list for you of haunts that did Christmas events and actually what they did and their ticket prices and all that. Some of the highlights, of course, there are the, you know, 13th floor group, and they tried out some things this year with that. Most of the haunts that opened as a haunt did the classic reskin. You know, they reskin their haunt, made it a Krampus theme, whatnot, et cetera, et cetera. There were a few attractions that tried something completely different, like the group that does Screamageddon in the Florida area. They tried to bring in an ice park, like a ski park. So just not even a haunt. Like there are some groups that did a whole different thing and experimented with that. And then one that I just talked to a few days ago is a Dead City Haunted House. And they tried this year for the first time to do a lot of TikTok video marketing. And their Christmas haunt TikTok videos went viral and ended up pushing them to sell out their nights, where they have people coming from multiple states away being like, I saw this guy on TikTok. I'm here to take a photo. And like, are you going to go through the haunt? Just here to take a photo? I mean, you know, like, so it's very interesting. There have been a lot of haunts pivoting to do that and a lot of interesting takes on it. And this year, what surprised me is the number of haunts that were doing something for Christmas, but also extending their season to not just do, you know, it used to be, we did maybe like, we did one blackout night, you know, and then we do like one Christmas thing or one something. But some of the haunts this year are trying to extend that to doing two or three or four weekends. Some have a full month. That surprised me. It surprised me, and yet it didn't, in that clearly the demand is pent up still from people wanting to do a thing. And clearly, you know, they sense that. And with the time ticketing, you know, it really does allow you to sell out your future and figure out, you know, you can put dates out there and then see if they sell. And if there's just no interest in those dates, you can refund and pull them, you know, but it does allow you to test out future nights. So very interesting Christmas stuff. I'm really excited to get some of those outliers on the phone and be like, how was, what did you do? You know, did it explode? Did everyone like it? Like, had the same problems as Halloween? Like, what's going on?
All right. So. Yep.
So, Phil, I'm gonna go back to the beginning. What started you in haunting?
Well, I think, as is the case with a lot of haunters, I was a home haunter, but didn't know it for a while. You know, the vernacular that we apply is something that's kind of like when you realize that there's an industry is when you realize you're a home haunter and that haunting's a thing. I had been a home haunter since I can remember. I mean, I was one of those, and you know, haunters also fall into different categories. And I am definitely the one that is the mousetrap guy. I'm not the performer. I'm the mousetrap builder. And so I was always the guy that was like, let's throw really elaborate Halloween parties where the house is absolutely transformed and there's this whole thing. But then I'm just going to sit in the background and watch people like, you know, interact at the party and tweak things. I'm not going to be like the ringmaster in the middle of running the party. And so I was all like, Halloween was always a concern of mine. I remember, I think the first thing that everyone should have known it was going to be a thing was when I was 5 and my mom and I, she had always wanted me to do like couples costumes with her from when I was like a baby and always like, and that was the year when she's like, we're going to be angels. And I'm like, I'm going to be a vampire. I'm not going to be an angel. I don't know what you're like angel. That's not a thing. So that was the year where I was like, I'm just going to be a monster for Halloween and I don't care. And it was kind of one of those like breaking points. And I think from there, you know, it just went. You know, we still have that picture of that year. It was like, this was the year it all started. And kind of from then, I would start with really elaborate parties and decorate the house. And then I eventually got into opening up the display. It started just like all things do as a yard display. Okay. The yard display creeped in. When I got my own place with roommates, then it became, we're going to do this whole walkthrough experience. And there was, by the time I was getting into high school and college, it was a thing. It was a larger thing. And then in college, it was even part of the lease agreement that I gave to people where I'm like, during the month of October, like this is going to happen. It's going to disturb your room and your whole thing. Like if you really want to, we'll close off your room so that people can't get in. But just so you know, like it's a thing. And of course, thankfully I had roommates that, usually helped, but at least did not hinder it, and usually allowed us to also use their rooms as scenes in the home haunt. So eventually we got to a point where the home haunt was kind of like busting at the seams. Our last home haunt, it was a 4-hour wait on Halloween wow. night. Nice. And we ended up having, it was like a back and forth with the city. You know, it was definitely one of those cases where I had to apply for a permit because we had a neighbor that was being grumpy. I had applied to a permit and every other person in the whole neighborhood signed on to the permit except for her. And the city was like, I mean, you can do it because it's just this one person. She's being, you know, ridiculous. So we had to hire security. We had to have crossing guards. It was this whole thing for a home haunt where we had to do all wow. these things just to pacify her. And it was like, we had to rope off her because she was like, if anyone parks on the sidewalk, even in front of my property line, I'm going to call the cops on you. So it was like, we were like, I mean, I had to have dedicated volunteers just to make sure that stuff was not being disrupted with her house. And we used every bit of the house, the front yard, all the rooms, it was this huge trail. And I think that was the first time I realized haunting was a thing because we filmed that and submitted it to those Home Haunter DVDs.
Right.
You know, and we're on there. It was like,
damn, really?
It was quite a long time ago. And you know, we're on there. And it was that was an experience. It was one of those things where I'm like, wow, this was so, it's just like we all do. That was so unsafe. I'm like, there was so much plastic. There was no fireproofing. Like that you have thousands of people coming through the house and just almost a continuous pulse of people. And there was so much room for damage. And also like nobody knew how to make blood. And so they were using cake batter recipes and spraying it on walls, which no, I mean, just so many bad ideas. Just everywhere you looked, it was a bad idea. And there was definitely a breaking point where we were like, we can't keep pushing this. Cause at that point you were getting buses like people were chartering buses to drive to the home haunt and drop off full groups of people and stand in line. And we were doing everything we could. We had projectors outside to play videos we had shot that told the story. We had sliders to try and entertain people. We had queue line actors. And we were like, this is too much. So at that point, we moved into trying to get a like a physical location. And that was, it's like, you know, every story we tell people now about things not to do, I did all of those things.
Right.
I tried getting a space at a hotel because I was like, this seems like a good idea. What could go wrong with renting a space from a hotel? And they have an empty bar that's not in use because they lost their liquor license. So we'll just use that. Oh, I don't, what could be wrong with that? Maybe the hotel guests would hate it. A bunch of noise and maybe the security issues and maybe the fact that haunts really can rough stuff up if you don't know what you're doing. And they wanted this bar to still be functional afterwards. Like maybe the fact that, you know, they had like wooden floors and there was carpet, like maybe all these things sort of just, and then eventually where I ended, because it became too much to me, was we did a screen park. We finally got a contract at the fairgrounds. And so we did a build at the fairgrounds. And that was kind of terrible, mainly because I didn't have resources like you guys and like this now. I didn't, you know, it wasn't the internet, you know, was not relatively new, you know, and at that time it was, you know, our team was like half construction workers and half like theater people. And just this, as haunters are, this mix of people who all knew different skills and were like, okay, let's, you know, try and put everyone together and create this thing. A lot of volunteers, a lot of high school students. And that last year we ended up doing three indoor haunts. We had access to indoor buildings and we had two scare zones outside. And we also had two stages for performance. We had stages where we had local bands, local people come and performing. Then we had scare zones and we had actual indoor attractions. And it was all still dangerous. Like it was all still basic flats with no fireproofing and no, like, it, I don't know, no fire marshal ever came and was like, where are your exits and how is all this planned out? Like nobody even like cared. And it was just a disaster. And all those little things too, like we didn't do metal detectors, we didn't bag screening. And so eventually, yes, we had people like bring in bottles of alcohol and they would smash it and they would threaten actors. And everything, like if you could make a mistake, I did it. And that was kind of the breaking point for me where I was like, I can't keep doing this because I feel like none of us know what we're doing and it's too much for me. And my specialty was marketing. You know, I got like $50,000 in advertising trade from local news and radio stations. And like being a haunt where, you know, we saw 10,000 people in our run the last time I did it, but that was still a lot of money for where we were. And, you know, that was my expertise, not the rest of it. And so I was like, I can't keep doing this. I want to just join a different team. And then I had to move. And so I didn't have my own place. So I couldn't home haunt and I couldn't do this anymore by myself. And so then I kind of turned to looking online more and was like, oh, there's actually a full community and I can still help other haunters by being like, hey guys, there are some things you should not do. These are some of them.
Yeah. I always try to pull a piece of knowledge out of every interview we do. And I think I already got it out of this one, which will show how naive I am about home haunting. But if I heard you and understood you right, when you started your home haunt, you had people actually going into your house and going through your home and then coming out. So all the home haunts I've knew were always out in the yard. Mm-hmm. I'd never heard of that before.
And you know, now I guess it's one of those things that I was so young and naive. I didn't, like, I had no idea how bad it was. And so I didn't even think of it. But now I'm like, the liability of having someone come into your house and go through this experience where they were being scared was so incredible that I'm still even like, oh my God, like how did nobody get hurt? And actually, as Jim knows, we didn't know how to teach our actors, as you guys must know, how to take hits or to do any of that. And so they all did get hurt. Like, that's the thing. Our actors tried to do fight scenes without any training. And they're just like, oh, I watched a YouTube video on on like stage combat. And I'm like, and for some reason I was just like, fine, do whatever you want. Like I was definitely that home hunter of like, oh, what character would you like to be? And like, what would you like to do? And like, which resulted in everyone just doing whatever they wanted and creating dangerous situations and actors getting hurt. But I will say, and you, no matter, we all have this feeling, like it was so unsafe. It was insane. I loved it. I loved like every minute of it. And everyone who left loved it. Like every people that stood 4 hours to wait on Halloween night and spent their whole Halloween with us, they were happy. And all they could do was thank us. And it didn't matter that our actors were covered in bruises and couldn't talk for the next week. And they were at school, you know, at the university, like not going to class. Nobody cared because it was such an experience. And that is the thing, you know, that is the power of what we do. And I've kind of never forgotten that, but I've also been like, maybe we should do it a different way.
So, you know, we've talked about your background. We talked a little bit about the reports. What about, let's talk about HauntCon education, because we've been discussing it, the three of us off air. And I know this year HauntCon is going to be virtual. How's that going to affect education?
That is an excellent question. And it's something that I've been thinking about quite a bit. And, you know, full disclosure, I don't make the final decisions. Sure. You know, I am a consultant for the education, and because I have been a teacher, I taught college, I taught high school, so I know a little bit about making lesson plans and about what classes should be like. And I do know haunting, and I've done a lot of haunt seminars and planned a lot and actually planned a lot of conferences. So I feel like I, in a weird way, I have a unique background to do it. But I guess the stance we're taking is, content wise, we want to make sure that we are covering topics that are things that you might have to change for 2021. So basically, overall, we're recommending contingency plans for haunts. You know, I'd say the one good thing about where we are now is that we know the worst case scenario. And so we've lived through it. And so now we're like, okay, this is the worst case. And the best case is operate without any restrictions at all. And everyone wants to come to your haunt and everything is as it was. So, you know, make 4 stages within that and then make your plan now for how you're going to execute your haunt. And what we're trying to do is cover topics that are things that would be impacted by those contingency plans. So with you guys, you know, for example, you know, what the actors are going to do, their fighting, their movement styles, all of that is impacted because you're going to have to come up with scenarios for if I'm going to have to maintain social distancing or if I'm not, and if we're going to have to wear masks and if we're not, and if all these things, or if they're not, you know, that's going to impact the contingency planning for your actor training for how close they're going to get to people. And so we're trying to cover those topics, like if you did not figure out how to do your airbrushing, learn it now, and you know, know what's involved. And if you didn't figure out your time ticketing, we'll have sessions on that. You know, we'll have sessions on these things that are being impacted. And then in terms of the delivery, that was something where I probably were way more opinionated than they were expecting on that. My opinion on it, and this is definitely strictly mine, just because they're not as crazy as I am, but I, you know, we did a virtual trade show called Virtually Prepared in March. And I did that with Scott Swenson and Brian and those folks. And I think where we are now is everybody is just zoomed out and they're conferenced out right now. So delivery, what kind of the line we drew was, if it is a regular session where you are just, is it's one person delivering linear education to somebody, that should be pre-recorded. And it should be pre-recorded because then it can be higher quality, because then the speaker can put in videos, they can do what they need to do, almost like you would a class. It should [S2] Right. [S1] Be pre-recorded. So like, you know, doing a base coat, like how to clean your airbrush and base coats and, you know, the basics of character design, those types of things are all pretty linear education. And you can just follow a path. Those would be pre-recorded. Then the next step would be workshops. And I was really on the driving that we should be having live workshops where you work with a small group of people to create something that you can then have that will help your haunt. And I think where Donnie and Jim, we talked a bit, you guys doing a workshop, really helping actors think about what they can do with their characters and how they can add fight and add showmanship and movement and all of that aspects to those characters. And that is something that you know, you could listen to you guys talk about it, which you do on Wrestle Horror, but it's a different level to work with the person, to have that brainstorming and that back and forth. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really needed. And that's why I'm like, this is a separate category that is needed, is those back and forth moments. Some of the other workshops are going to be like, I mentioned Dead Factory or Dead, not Dead Factory, Dead City. And they're, so, you know, he's going to do a workshop on how to create linear videos where he just says, this is what I did. And now let's talk with you guys and let's try and make a plan for how you would shoot some of your linear videos. And I think those steps are important because, you know, somebody to help us, to help talk us through those things is pretty critical in order to helping us do it. And then the third category for delivery would be panels. And that's because, you know, panels can be done wrong. Definitely. We've seen a lot of terrible panels, but I think the best panels really provide an environment to have a dynamic conversation about topics that the audience is interested in that you could not get in a workshop because you don't have the number of experts, or you can't get in a single linear conversation. And so the panels that we're looking to put out there are panels where that's the driving factor. We're trying to put these people together around topics to have really dynamic conversations to get to answers that we're not even aware of, you know, in a way. So those are the three kind of methods, I think, that of delivery that we have decided on to make sure that the education is as best as we can do virtual.
Okay. Very cool. It's definitely going to be different. You know, I've been to a couple of haunt cons in my day, and always love the education that's provided there. And when I heard it was going virtual this year, it's like, well, and that was the first thing that came to my mind is, how are you going to do these things? And you've just explained that in a way that makes a lot of sense to deliver the content for people that need to see this content. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we are trying also to make sure that we kind of planned out to make sure we have something to hit all those areas that might be impacted, you know, make sure we talk about costuming and we talk about actor training and also those areas that just came up this year, which I feel like might also happen next year, which are security and ops planning. And those, you know, we had so many security issues this year in the industry. And we had a lot of those incidents. And so having some of those discussions about how you de-escalate those. And of course, the Chaos program is a great program, and that's an incredible resource, you know, but there's also this year people that are not going to be able to travel to Transworld, you know, to do that and just need some kind of really some basic pointers on this is what I can do to de-escalate line situations that happen and to handle an incident PR wise when it comes up, because that was a big uptick this year. And I also think some things that are also like touchier topics like diversity and inclusion, which is because it's part of the mainstream conversation, it's going to be part of the haunt conversation this year. And we need to know how to address those things. So we tried to make it balanced, but of course, we can't hit everything. And that's also what makes the haunt industry so fascinating, is that it is like, it's like you go to every other niche. You're like, small businesses and theater and, you know, carpentry. There's so much that goes into a haunt. It's like when I get emails regularly from people that say, how do I start? And I'm like, like, you know, it's at that point, you're like, we could almost have a class on just the things that you need to know to start a haunt and how many domains that it really crosses into. Right. You know, it's not just a small business. It's also a performance. It's also a story. It's also actor-based. It's so many things. And because of that, that's why we wanted to apply the lens of these are things that are going to be impacted. And so we can't do everything. So we're going to do these things and we're hoping that we hit everything, but I know that we've already missed some things and that's just going to have to be okay because there are other shows or other conventions and there are podcasts, you guys, right. You know, there's a lot of people out there trying to make sure everyone's prepared for 2021.
That's I'm glad you guys are looking at it this way, because even though the vaccine's rolling out now, it's going to be a long time before this all smooths over. And we've got to be prepared, and people have to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this also, in my opinion, won't be the last time something like this happens. I think we'll have more of this coming down the future, and we should be better prepared for it, you know, this time around.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I 100% agree. I think this needs to get into the kind of vocabulary that we talk about. Is disaster planning needs to be part of our haunt vernacular going forward. And it's great, because we lived through it once. Like, you know, and so now we all have the experience to say, okay, we need to be thinking about this every year. If something catastrophic does happen, we've been through it. We know quickly how to pivot and to adjust these things. And that's going to be, I think, a mainstay going forward. And I agree with you guys as well that it's not going to be all daisies. Right. And when haunt season gets here, so it's really, you know, it really needs to be something we think of now, as much as we don't want to. Nobody wants to have to be thinking about, especially now. I'm like, everyone's like, Christmas, and I'm like, you should be thinking about how bad your haunt season could be. Everyone's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, well, I mean, you need to start now about, you know, because I think everyone will need to open this year. We can't skip another year for some of these guys, so it's right. Time to start doing this planning.
Absolutely. So onto a little bit of a lighter subject. Let's talk about Gantam. I'm very familiar with Gantam lighting.
I see what you did there. Lighter subject, yeah.
It was nice and punny.
I'm good. What can I say? But no, we've interacted in the past. This isn't our first rodeo. Love Gantam lighting. And the reason I brought it up is, you know, most haunters are familiar with Gantam lighting and what they provide. But, you know, since this is called wrestle horror, there are some wrestling promoters that could benefit from using certain Gantam lighting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So for our listeners that are more on the wrestling side of things, what is Gantam lighting?
Well, at Gantam, we make the world's smallest intelligent spotlights. So it's a very niche thing. And our primary, so we started off in the haunted attraction space because our founder actually started the first haunted house in mainland China. And then it got shut down because he did not do anything properly, which is the theme with him. He is a magnificent human, but also definitely does not ask permission. And so the government was like, this thing, like, you can't do it. And then it was at HauntCon when he was having a discussion with Leonard and some of the other wizened haunters, where he was like, I just made these lights for my haunt because I couldn't find any to buy. And they're like, you should sell them to us. And so then Darklight was born and then became Gantam later. And we've now evolved into primarily serving theme parks. So we work with every major theme park worldwide. Our biggest customers are Disney and Universal. And because of that, you know, we haunts are our family, and that's where we come from. And but I do have to point out that, you know, a lot of our fixtures are not needed, I think, in a haunt space. And I think that's become known in the past several years. And it's because we're engineering them to work in theme parks. And those are people that are very highly regulated, and they need to be durable, and they need to be inspected. They need to be weatherproof. There's all of these mountains of code. And since we sell worldwide, like it's a lot, you know, for these things. And so they've kind of developed into being a little bit of an overkill, I think, for a lot of facilities. And a lot of that comes down to the concept of the DMX.
Right.
You know, so, and I think that's where for the wrestling folks out there, you know, the first question I think that you would need to be is really, what is your plan for the show? What are you trying to add to this, you know, to this experience? And do you need DMX to pull that off? And DMX is a programming protocol for when you do lighting design. And really use DMX when you want a lot of lights to be working together in sync to be telling a show. And you can integrate lights and music and all sorts of stuff in the same DMX system. And so if you're trying to make your show more of a performance, in that you have particular moments like the beginning, or you have your storytelling, your beginning of matches or whatnot, you're trying to tell a story and you need the lighting and the sound cues, you need all these theatrical elements as part of your experience, then you would probably consider leaning over into DMX. And if you're doing that, what our specialty is, being the smallest form factor DMX lights that exist, that are also very rugged. Everything is IP65, meaning that if it gets water on it and everything, it's all going to be fine. Because that. So then, once you think about what kind of show am I making, then you're thinking about your environment. How likely is it, that your area is going to be flooded or might get water damage or whatnot? Is it worth the money to buy lights that are going to be fine, even if it gets flooded? And a voltage variance, all that kind of stuff would be your next thought process of your facility for your show planning. So then the third thing would be like, do you need Gantam? Because we specialize in making the smallest. So if you're looking for lights that are like high impact, spotlights, big spotlights, or, you have mood lighting or things like that. Those are not what we do. We do very small fixtures because you want to be able to hide them in plain sight, to hide them somewhere where you don't have a lot of space. And everything we use is also 12 volts, and that's very low power. And so, you could potentially run your whole show off a battery, which we have some people do for Christmas or whatnot. They just swap out, have these huge battery packs, and they swap them out, every day and recharge them. So if some of these, if you have these constraints, that's why Gantam is a good thing for you. If you don't, there are probably better lights for your experience. So we're never trying to tell people to use our lights in every situation. We're like, if you have this very unique problem where you don't have enough space, or you don't have enough power, and you still need rugged lights and DMX and to do all these crazy effects, then Gantam. But if not, there are a bunch of other solutions. Another solution that we have that we invented specifically for haunts is our color piano fixtures, which are the same body as our flood and spot fixtures, but they don't require DMX, but they still can do a show. So what you do is they have local memory. And so you take your smartphone and then you program in real time what you want the light to do. You want it to pulse, so you want it to pulse for 10 seconds and then to do a strobe or whatever you want it to do in real time. So kind of like you tap out the scene in real time, and then you can save it into the light, and the light remembers that. And it also has a trigger button on it so that an actor or somebody on the staff can press the trigger and trigger a new sequence, and then it would go back to the old sequence. So it has all this capability in a fixture, which gets around the DMX thing. Because the other thing with DMX is that it's expensive to just run the data, and the cabling. So it can get too expensive. So that was a very long answer to your question. And I think I'm going to go back and settle on the first thing that in the wrestling you would want to ask is, what kind of show and what kind of atmosphere am I trying to create? And how important is that? And then from there, you can figure out, is it lights? Is it sound? Is it fog? What is it that is part of this experience that I need to put in it? And then you can kind of from there. And if you have a really unique situation that it is like, would be perfectly suited for Gantam, we have an on-staff LD, which I can put anyone in touch with, and she can kind of troubleshoot with you what would work and what wouldn't work.
Perfect.
Just a quick example that I was thinking of as you were explaining that is, like, basically for an independent wrestling show like ours, like the ring entrance, would that DMX board and all that be able to be programmable for each individual wrestler? So like wrestler A and wrestler B would have different light colors and different flashes and movements, and then the same with the rest of the wrestlers on the card. So we could program it to where every wrestler would have their own light set, their own lighting entrance, and it'd be different from everybody else's.
Mm-hmm. And that would be like a perfect example of a very close to a theatrical example too, where basically you set up these cues, and each cue is for a different wrestler, and they have whatever you want to put into that cue, from the lighting, the sound, music, anything to go in. You can even incorporate in sound with it so that the automated clips play. You can do, you know, however much of a show you want to create with that. That would be a perfect example. And there are, even in the DMX stuff, we don't provide, even though it says Gantam lighting controls, we don't provide controls. you know, there are control systems out there that are really simple, where you can just actually program in a few cues. Like you say, you have like five, you know, wrestlers that you want, and you can make a cue for each one. Or you can go all the way to crazy complicated systems that are like the ones that run the full dark rides at theme parks. So like you can kind of, even in the control world, there are this to do just what you want, you know, even one to like five sequences up to really complicated. And that is actually beyond my, that would be our designer who's on staff would help with that, because I'm not a line designer by trade. Or even Jim, you know, when it comes down to programming, I know you guys have done your fair share at Hans you worked at. So, yeah. You know,
yeah. Well, I'm looking at the clock and time is drawing nigh. Donnie, you have that question you've always got to ask our guests.
Yeah. Yeah. Before I get into that though, I want to give a quick plug on this book, because I started reading it.
Okay.
I wanted to have Philip talk a little bit about it, and it's the new one from Scott. And like I said, I just got into it. You can see my bookmark there, and it's I'm really enjoying it. And it looks like there's some clips that's from his podcast, and some, you know, then it's added stuff in. If you could talk about it a little bit and let readers know or listeners know where they could get it.
Yeah, so it is called The 13 Commandments of Haunting, and the cover is actually hand painted. It's a painting by Scott, and so you can kind of see the canvas. Yeah, you can see how he painted the whole cover and then put the text on it. So it's a fun thing for your listeners. And it is basically how I think of it is it's sort of meant to be like a reference book. It's just over 200 pages. So it is quite thick at 6x9, mm-hmm. over 200 pages. So it's a book. Like it's a book. And it's more supposed to be a reference material. And the way I like to think of it is it's like having a Scott on your bookshelf. And if you are sitting here thinking, oh, I really need to redo XYZ or think about this, you have a topic you're trying to think about or something you're wondering about, you go to the index and you just go to the chapter, you find that particular topic, and then you can flip directly to the page. You know, every page is in the index with what the topic is on that page. And so you can very easily go directly to what Scott has to say about that particular thing. And it was created by taking what I did was I wrote a blog post to his first 30 episodes of his podcast, and I put those and circulated those around, and we got feedback on what really resonated with the community. And then based on that feedback, what resonated, and based on the core content we had, I put it together into a book, and we edited where we needed to and moved stuff as needed, but we put it into a book, and we grouped them by topic, you know, by three broad topics, and then each chapter is a particular deep dive on a different topic. So we kind of tested it to see what people resonated with the most, and that's where we got that. So it's available on Amazon, The 13 Commandments of Haunting, as a physical book or as a ebook, and it will shortly be available on Apple Books.
Very cool. All right, now we can get to our question and start winding down here. I know I'm running short on time. All right, I'm sure you've heard this question. We ask everybody. You are the main character in your own horror film. What is your go-to kill?
Yeah, so I've been thinking about this since I've been listening to the show so much. And I've loved some of the answers that people have given. And I guess this is just also in keeping with my personality. Mine would definitely be definitely like a coup or poisoning, and or the same thing. We're talking like Red Wedding, Game of Thrones style. Like it would be like that. I don't know what that says about me. It's like when I said I was a mousetrap person, I'm definitely like a full mousetrap person. Like I am like you like if I were the, like, you wouldn't even know. I would just be like a side character in the person's life. And then suddenly like they would be in an impossible situation with no way out that I have orchestrated to like take out the entire family and everyone who knows them all in one swoop kind of a thing.
You just set the trap and let them kill themselves, pretty much.
I like that's, that. I do.
I'm definitely like, I'm not, just like I said, I'm not the ringmaster. I'm not the person who's, I'm not going to be up in the face of what it, I mean, it's going to be like, when I reveal myself, it's going to be like, they have no way out. And I'm just revealing myself because I want the satisfaction of watching them die and watching the realization on their face that they have no way to get out of this. Like that, I'm definitely like, I just show up at the end as they've already consumed the poison. And they're like, what are you doing here? And they're looking around all their family and everyone's like choking and they're like, guards. And I'm like, the guards all work for me. Like this is like, you literally have no way out. And they're just like, why? And I'm like, you know why.
All right, he sounds a little more evil than I thought. So Philip, how can people find out more about you, about HauntCon, about Gantom, and magazine
attraction network,
Haunted Attraction Network?
Well, for the Haunted Attraction Network, we have a website. We're also a podcast. And the two, you know, we do news, we have newsletters, we have a lot going on with that. We try and keep everyone up to date, and we're updating all of our reference pages as well with all the other podcast industry and shows and everything. So you can search for us in any podcast app. We're available everywhere, or you can just go to hauntedattractionnetwork.com or find us on social. We have a oddly large following on Facebook, which I'm still trying to figure out. And then for the magazine, we do offer free subscriptions to the magazine for people that are in the U.S. that are in the haunt industry. So you can get a subscription to the magazine by going to seasonalentertainmentsource.com and clicking on the subscribe button. And there'll be like, you know, a section for you to fill out the industry that you're in. You say haunter and whatnot. And let's see, for Gantom, you can get our stuff from Fright Props or from a lot of other dealers, or you can request a quote directly from us, or just reach out to us to ask what, would this work for me? Would this not? And we have a team that will help you, that will tell you, no, there are things that are better for you over here, or, you know, this would save you money if you did this. We have a great team that can help you with that at gantom.com, and there's a quote button or a contact button there. Okay. And is that everything?
HauntCon?
Oh, HauntCon. Yes. Okay. HauntCon, you know, HauntCon.com. The show is January 19th through 21st, and the education is free, which is something we're really pushing on because we wanted it to be accessible for haunts that were really trying to get everything ready for 2021. Because we all need 2021 yes. to go well. And I'm so proud of the team. I didn't make this decision. I'm so proud of the team for sticking behind that as a core value of providing the education for free. And there's a whole platform with vendors and conversations. So that they're really trying to add a lot of value for attendees. So you can go there just on the main website and sign up to get your badge ID. And then, from there you'll go into the platform and you can choose the education that you want to sign up for and get the details for that, or watch the on-demand sessions.
Perfect. All right, Philip, thank you so much for being on the Wrestle Horror Podcast with us. I'm looking forward to airing this episode. We're definitely gonna have to have you back on because there's a lot. We've just scratching the surface now. So I look forward to having you on in the future. Don't forget to check out all of his ventures, buy some lighting if you need some lighting, go to HauntCon, listen to something on the Haunted Attraction Network, buy the book, subscribe to the magazine. Don't forget on our end to check out our Facebook, Wrestle Horror, Instagram at Wrestle Horror, Twitter at Wrestle Horror, YouTube at the Wrestle Horror Channel, and you can find us on most podcast outlets. I'm Meat Hook Jim, along with Donnie Hoover, with our guest, Philip Hernandez. Thank you for listening, watching. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you follow us on all of our social media outlets, facebook.com/WrestleHorror, Instagram at WrestleHorror, Twitter at WrestleHorror, on YouTube at the Wrestle Horror Channel. And you can also find us on our website, www.WrestleHorror.com.